listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, here we are. Welcome to Your Ultimate Life, Your Ultimate Life. And in this series, my whole purpose, whether I'm alone or have guests, today I'm alone, is to give you the benefit, or if I hope it's a benefit, of my 68 years that I've been alive, of being here on the earth and working specifically on a powerful project, and that is how to create the ultimate life. Now, everybody has a different definition of it, but almost all of the definitions include money, freedom, time. Many people include family, loved ones. Lots of people that I talk to include purpose, like some meaning to life, like you're doing something that matters. I had a coaching call earlier today, and we're starting a new, this has been a long time client, but starting a new series of work. And the first thing that was on the list was create an identity. And that meant for products and services and things that are going on. And so creating your ultimate life is something you have control over. Nobody can create it for you. And for example, some people think, well, if I win the lottery, ooh, that'll take care of everything. No, it doesn't. All it does is make all the problems that you already have bigger. Everybody wants a piece of you. Everybody wants some of your money. People are going to come and invest it for you. And we all know those stories. So none of that happens for you, no matter what happens around you. Someone can hate you. Someone can betray you. Someone can be unfaithful. Someone can embezzle or steal all your money. Somebody can break into your house. I've had that happen. Ooh, that's a feeling of violation, right? You come home and a bunch of crap is messed up and broken and things are missing. And the first time that happens, it's like you almost choke with somewhere between anger and frustration, because stuff that you thought was like, you know, yours, sanctity is gone in a minute, in a heartbeat. You see all that. So it doesn't matter what happens around you. You and only you have the levers of your life. So since that's true, then the question is, okay, fine. I'm not going to argue with you, Kellen. Good. Because it won't matter if you do. All that does is waste energy. What are the principles? What are the tools? Well, I've been reading a book recently called The Science of Getting Rich. Now, that's a book by a dude that was written a long time ago, maybe 100 years, Wallace Wattles. And he's a skinny looking dude. But the book is great. You can read it if you want. He had like 10 books, and I bought a compilation. You know, it's all 10 books in one. What they didn't tell me was the print was microscopic. So me with my crappy eyes, I have a bit of trouble reading it. But anyway, the principles in the book are based on you. You have control. So even 100 years ago, they're writing about the same thing. Here's a problem. We have a problem today. And the problem today is we get more and more dependent emotionally and other in other ways on outside things. So we expect the government to handle things. We expect somebody, it's somebody's job to make sure my life is good, easy, and cruising. It's somebody else's fault if things don't go my way. And inside, we know that's not really true, but it kind of feels like it ought to be, like we're entitled to some kind of ease and flow. It's kind of like getting mad at God when it snows, you know, and we were planning on doing something. So it's spring already, right? Today's March the whatever, 26th. And spring started earlier this year than it has in 128 years or something like that. The actual celestial equinox was on the 19th. So a week ago, earliest, usually on the 21st or something like that. Somewhere in the 19th, the sun crossed the equator in the sky. And so that was the beginning of spring. Well, here up in Edmonton, Alberta, it, you know, there was already snow. There was a warm week before that happened. But then now it's snowed in the last 6 or 7 days have been kind of cold, and there's snow again in the backyard. So somebody could be mad and say, come on, it's supposed to be spring. Now that's silly, right? Because we all know we don't control the weather. Like, we don't control that. And it's nature or God or whatever. Okay, well, we can allow that. And we don't control how gravity works. Well, those are just kind of the boundary conditions. And then we get to decide if we're pissed off because it snows, or if we're mad because of how gravity works, or we can decide what to do with it, how to create with it, right? So that is the fundamental principle. You are in charge. Things around you are what they are. And we get off the rails when we, you know, with gravity and with weather and stuff, we can understand that. So we don't, I mean, we might get mad at it, but we realize it's kind of stupid. Guess what? It's just as stupid or pointless, to not use a pejorative word, to blame your own unhappiness on someone else's behavior. Now, I've talked about that a lot in different ways on different episodes. Tonight, I'm going to talk about leadership. Now, I have had many, many years of leadership in different companies of different sizes, all the way up to C-suite, you know, CEO, leader positions, COO, and other kinds of things in the U.S. and Canada. So I had a 30-year career, which included some of those officer-level positions. Lots of people reporting to you in meetings and all the stuff. You know the drill. That is what we traditionally think of often as leadership. In fact, that was all that it used to be. Someone would ask, oh, do you have a leadership position? And people would immediately think in your company or your job or whatever. That is simply not true. And it's becoming less true by the minute. And today I want to talk about the role that leadership and leadership principles have for you right now today, regardless of if you work for yourself, if you're unemployed, if you work in a company, and whether you do or don't have, quote, people reporting to you on some org chart. That's old, old school, not even important today. The principles are still important, in fact, more critical than ever. If you're going to create a life like you want. Now, I always use purpose, prosperity, and joy. Have you defined what your ultimate life would be? Do you have a definition? If I say, what's your ultimate life? Can you rattle it off for me right here, right now? And does it represent truth? I ask people that question all the time. What is your ideal life or your ultimate life? And you know what? Most people can't answer it. They can give some, well, you know, freedom to do whatever I want. And, oh, no obligations and all the money I need. But they haven't actually thought about what combination of things really represent that. And often people say, well, you know, good family, good relationships. And they mean that. It's deep in their heart. But then there are also other things like health and money. And, oh, yeah, health and money. So they haven't really thought about it. So here's why it's important to think about. Every day, every week, every month, every year, you set goals. You set them either explicitly or accidentally. If you don't do anything, then you've set sort of a default goal of getting through the day without catastrophe, getting to work without getting in a wreck. That may be nothing for you, but on bad snowy days here, that might be a big deal. Or getting through a day without getting called in on the carpet because of some project you did or didn't turn in. Or having some argument with one of your kids or your partner. You know, all of those things, those are kind of default goals. If I can just get through the day without drama. If I can get through the day without somebody mad at me. Those are unspoken and default goals. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those. But I'm telling you, they're 100 million miles below what you're capable of if you want it. As soon as I say that, people often think, I don't want to be a slave. I don't want to work so hard. I'm not talking about working hard. I'm talking about being clear. So if I say to myself, I want to write a book and I want to create an album of music. And I say those two things because I do both. I'm an author. I have 19 books. I have 88 songs on Spotify and iTunes and all the rest of the platforms. And I'm just about ready to put three more. So I have a boatload of both. And I could say, well, this month I'm going to write an album and a book. And if I don't get clear about which is first and what's most important and why, those two goals will be competing all the time. And that's an obvious example. But if you don't get clear on what really is important to you today, this week, this month, you're going to be living all the time with internal conflict. Internal conflict is that feeling where you think, I want to do this and I should be doing that. I want to do this and I should be doing that. All of that is evidence of lack of leadership. You've probably worked, in a company or for someone in some situation where you couldn't tell one day to the next, or maybe one week to the next, what was really important. Priorities seemed to shift. Things were unclear, and it's really uncomfortable to work in that kind of environment where you go to work and it's like, you know, you don't know what's going to happen today. Is it going to hit the fan or whatever? And maybe have nothing, maybe it has nothing to do with what you do or your job at all. But you know what that feels like. Well, that's what your life is like when you don't exercise leadership principles. Now, I'm going to give you five leadership principles, and then I'm going to talk about how they apply to you. And before you say, I don't have a leadership position, just put that on the shelf for a minute. I'm not going to argue with you. You do, and here's why. At a minimum, you are the leader, the sovereign, the king or queen, the empress or emperor, the master of your own life. Now, if you argue with that in your mind, if you say, no, I'm not, all that means is that you have been living a life not exercising leadership. That's okay. Nobody's calling anybody out, but it is true that you're the master of your life. It may also be true at this moment that you have given away all your power, your time, your authority. And so right now, at this moment when you hear this, your life is jam-packed with other things that people expect, have asked of you, and you said yes because you couldn't say no, and all of that. So that might be true right now. That's okay. What I want you to learn from this, if you want to, is regardless if that's true right now, you can start today exercising these five leadership principles that I'm going to give you to take back control of your life, your time, your energy, your passion, your love, your money, and everything. Okay? Now, if you want to take back that control, so you have absolute sovereign control and are the leader of your life, raise your hand. Good. I can't see you, but I'm assuming nearly everyone raised their hand unless you're already there. Now, if you're already there, I invite you to do something. I invite you to reach out to me. Because people that have already learned the principles that I'm going to talk about here and how to create the life they want, I love having a larger and larger set of acquaintances that have that. How you can reach me is yourultimatelife.ca. Opt in there and you'll be able to get a hold of me or connect with me on one of the social media platforms. That's a serious invitation. I mean that because I like to have guests on both this show and my podcast who have learned these principles. And the reason is because how they are applied in every situation is unique. And the more ways we can see, books we read, shows we hear, videos we watch, where we see these principles of self-determination, I use the words purpose, prosperity, and joy, the more examples we see of that, the more likely it is that we are able to do it ourselves, figure out how to take leadership responsibility of our own lives. All right. So whether you're a leader of someone in a formal sense, a volunteer sense in your community, in your church, in your job, in your family, or anything else, all of the things that we're going to talk about apply to that. But I'm going to start at the most basic level, which is your leadership of your life. I am continually, I'm not surprised anymore, but it's continually interesting to me how many people say to me they don't have control of their lives. No, I have to this. And you can tell because the language is have to. I have to do this and I have to do that. Oh, I'd love to do that, but I can't because, and then they list all the things they have to do. And if you use the word have to, H-A-F-T-A, I have to, that implies obligation. Obligation is a dirty word. And you're going to say, what? Here's what I mean. When you say the word obligation, and I have to, if that's how it feels, it always carries the seeds of resentment. Here's what I mean. Well, I have to this means I'd rather be doing something else. But I feel like I have to do this. Now, you know, I don't care what it is. You know right now, I have to go to work tomorrow. No, you don't. No, you don't. But I'd lose my job. Okay. Then I wouldn't pay rent. Okay. Then I'd be homeless. Okay. But you still don't have to. What you're saying implicitly is I don't like the possible consequences of making that choice. That's okay. And I'm not saying quit your job or do anything weird. What I am saying is own your sovereignty. Here's the difference that it makes. I have another client that I talk to often about this idea of leadership. And there's a situation with this particular client. There's one area of their lives that they feel just a sense of obligation. And it's, not fun. Other areas of life, they've owned this idea. And one of the things we're working on is changing the feeling. The situation is not able to be changed. That individual has decided they're going to stay in that situation. Well, that's fine. Now, here's your choice. And this is this bit about your sovereign. You can stay in the situation grumpily, angrily, and in frustration, or you can say, I have committed to that. I choose to commit and execute joyfully for days, weeks, months, years. It doesn't matter. I choose that. And if that's new to you, it might feel like, well, I can't do that. I hate doing that. Hating doing something is a choice. Hating doing something is a choice. I'll give you an example, silly one. Mowing the lawn. Okay. Mowing the lawn has never been my favorite part of life. But every time I own a house, or at least a house with a yard, during some seasons, you got to mow it. And here in Edmonton, the growing season is short, but violent. And by violent, I mean it grows furiously. So the house we're in now has, it's on a little bit of a hill, so there's rocks and tiered stuff, so we don't have a lawn to mow. But the house we were in just before this one, 4 or 5 years ago, we were there for several years, and that had a lawn in the back, a little bit in front, but a significant lawn in the back. And it grew like crazy. And in the summertime, we had to mow it. And on top of that, we had a dog. The dog pooped all over the yard. So you had to gather the poop and then mow the lawn. I did not enjoy that until I decided that I did. And I decided that during the time I cleaned up the poop, mowed the lawn, I was going to just enjoy this. I was going to create fun. And you know what? The job got done either way. The difference that it made was how I felt before, during, and after. Before, I got to do this. Better drag myself. Oh, good. The battery on the electric lawnmower's dead. I can put it off. That was one way. Another way is it's time to mow the lawn. It's going to look beautiful afterwards, and we're going to be free to walk on it without fear of stepping in dog poop. Yippee! And then go do it. It actually took about the same time, but I felt way different. I felt good leading up to it. I prepared well, battery charged, got it done, and loved the way it looked. Now, that's a small and silly, it's not silly, it's a true and real example. And what I'm hoping to communicate to you is every single activity in your life is exactly the same. All right, here are the five principles of leadership. They apply to you as an individual, and they apply to you as a leader of any size of team or a company. Clarity, connection, communication, commitment, and consistency. Yeah, I made them all start with C on purpose. And I also call them core competencies. Ooh, another bunch of alliterative C's. Leadership core competencies. Clarity, connection, communication, commitment, consistency. We're going to talk about all five of those and how they apply principally to you as an individual in leading your own life as a sovereign. I'll also include some examples from my own past as an executive, how that applies to team leadership and so forth. The first thing, with the first C, first core competency is clarity. Clarity. Now, clarity, you'd think, well, duh, of course, clarity, I understand that. My guess is not really. Because earlier I asked you to think about or declare what is your ultimate life. If you can't tell me right away what that is, like someone asked me, what's my life? My ultimate life, a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Purpose, prosperity, and joy. That for me is the ultimate life. You notice I didn't say, well, I need to be healthy to have the ultimate life. And I need to have, you know, a bunch of other things. Purpose, prosperity, and joy. Here's why I pick those words. I've been unhealthy. Those of you that follow much know in 2018, 5 and a half, almost 6 years ago, be 6 years in June, I died. I contracted a fatal illness. I was in a coma in the hospital for a month, coma for 17 days, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then I had to recover from all that. That was a great blessing. I enjoyed it. I kept my business running, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I was happy during it. I counted it a blessing. I had a near-death experience. I wrote some books. It was amazing. Wow. That's a choice, by the way. I could have been really angry and frustrated. How come this? What happened? I was doing so good. Thought I was adding good to the world. I could have been mad at God or whoever. I chose differently. So I got to have good health isn't on my ultimate life list. I like that, but I know how to navigate life in a joyful and powerful way, regardless of the ups and downs of health. So, and that's just one example. So for me, my ultimate life, the life I love to jump up and fly into every day, I know it because I do it, a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Now, my purpose today in this whole year is to reach 250 million people. Wow, 250 million. Yeah, I know, big number. 250 million people to help you see who you really are so you can create from your infinite possibility, create your ultimate life. So that's clarity for me. I know what that is. I reaffirm it every day. I live into it. I think about it. I explore more ways. This broadcast, my podcast, I'm guests on others. I write books. I speak at conferences. Why? Because I want to serve you, to help you be encouraged to understand you have gifts just like I do. You have opportunities. You can create more. You can create all the purpose, prosperity, which includes the cash we need, and joy that you want to. Now, I have an advantage because my wife is Joy and she's an angel. So I have an angel in my house all the time and her name is Joy. So purpose, prosperity, and joy. Ooh, joy. My joy's half done all the time. That's a little bit silly, but it's true. All right. So you have to be clear with yourself. And so if that's not clear for you, exactly what you're trying to accomplish this week, this month, this year, what is this year about? What do you want for Christmas that you don't have now? And I don't mean win the lottery and stuff like that. You don't control that. Stuff that you can do or work on. If you're not clear on that, then you stumble around. That's true in companies also. When you are a leader in a company, if your department, your division is not clear what you're trying to do, it's very difficult to give good direction, to motivate your people, to encourage them, to do any kind of performance evaluation on yourself or others. It's really difficult without clarity. So creating clarity, finding clarity, insisting on clarity. If you're in the middle of a chain of command, working up and down that chain to create clarity is essential for good leadership. It's essential for morale. It's essential for people to love coming to work, to be committed to each other. It's not the only thing, but clarity, which is real ability to speak definitions, words, goals in a way that everybody understands and buys into. So clarity is the first of the five principles. The second of the five principles is connection. Now, I know that you've worked for a boss that you hated to see. Maybe they weren't even at your location. They were in another building. I had a situation like that where I supervised people that were in the building I was and then another group that was somewhere else. In fact, most of my people were in the somewhere else place and the smaller group was actually in the building where the management team was. And that connection I needed, and I did, make a significant and directed and focused effort to keep high connection with the group that was in the other building. It was maybe 20 minutes or a little bit more, a drive to get to that other building. First thing I did, and I happened to come to that company from outside. I wasn't even in that company. I was an outsider that was hired. So I had a special challenge, a special opportunity. What did I do? Well, I made sure I immediately went to the place and I scheduled one-to-ones with everybody out there within the first 30 days, 60 days. And why did I do that? Not to scare anybody and not to do anything weird. And I made sure immediately that it was clear that the one-to-ones were just to get acquainted, so I knew what was going on. It was not to change or fix or adjust or to do anything. I said, I can't do anything as you know, in the job that I have without knowing you. So I wanted a connection. And in that first conversation, I didn't do anything except ask questions about them because I was curious. Not surprisingly, they were very guarded and reticent at first. I don't know what their leadership experience had been like right before that, but I do know that in this way, it took me some time to create a connection. Now, that is obvious when you're leading a team in a company to create individual connection with all the people you supervise. Now, if you have large groups of 100 or 200 or 500, which I had in another circumstance, that's a lot more challenging, and there are other ways to go about that. But again, like I mentioned to start with, I really want to focus on personal things first. So you might say, Kellen, I'm already connected with myself. I'm going to call you out on that. How many times today, this week, have you had what I call internal conflict, where you think, I should do this? No, I want to do that. Oh, I should do this. I'm supposed to do that. Yeah, but I want to do that. That, I call that the battle at the boundary. That is means that you're not connected. You're not connected with your true values, what you truly value. Like in analyzing or thinking about that kind of thing, you don't have to create drama. Drop the good and bad, right and wrong. Just answer this question. Why is there a conflict there? What are the things creating conflict? Is it someone else's expectation? Is it a promise you made yourself? A sad but true example out of my life were the years when I struggled with addictions. Back prior to 2007, I had years when I had some very significant addiction issues. So in those times, I would have that conflict a lot. I need to do this. Ooh, no, I want to do this. And that's a real easy one to see. And then the truth is connection. What is truly important? And after you identify it, you might need to get some help or talk to somebody or whatever. You know, we're not talking about that situation right now because it would take more time than we have. But your ability to connect with your true values, who you really want to be in the world, who you want to be for yourself or for others, really, not what anyone else expects. I'm not talking about someone else's script or dialogue. Who do you want? Like if you died and someone were to put truth on your headstone or read truth from the, you know, the funeral, at the funeral, not let's be nice to, you know, Kellen or you or whatever, but truth, what would they say? What would you want the truth to be? Are you connected with that? If you're supervising other people, you need to be connected with their lives and their needs and their wants. In the old management model, it was leave your personal crap at home. Leave your personal crap at home. Come to work and leave all that somewhere else. It didn't work then, and it doesn't work now. Now, at least, we have the attitude and understanding that we're going to admit that it doesn't, and we're going to talk about that and provide, you know, a method to compensate or to deal with those situations. In the old days, when it was leave your crap at home, those things just festered and caused the problems in communication, employee relations, and that sort of thing. They cause the same kind of problems in you. If you have unresolved conflict about what you're supposed to do and what you want to do is going to win every time. maybe you'll do what you're supposed to do, but you'll be mad about it, angry about it, and frustrated about it. And that kind of connection means you do it grudgingly. People are offended. They know you're doing it without, you know, against your will and all the rest. So that is a very important and powerful thing. Connection. How do you create connection? Well, I talked about the one-to-ones I did with that group, and then I went and did them every quarter after that. So I did an initial one, and I did it every quarter for as long as I was there. Why? Because I wanted to keep the connection strong. It paid big dividends. It paid big dividends because after I was there for a while, I realized I did need to make some significant changes, and I had to do that in a way that kept people in good spirits, company running, and, you know, moving along well. And that was only possible because I had created the connection, empathetic, and I knew them, and I knew what they wanted, what was important, and they knew me. So that kind of connection is really important as a leadership principle. The third of the three C's is communication. Communication, most of our communication, it's not what you think. I read somewhere just recently that over, I think it was 60%, 58 or 60% of communication between individuals is done through body language. Now, whether that's the right number or not doesn't matter. It's more than half. So louder than what you say, it's your attitude, your energy, your body language. Now, what is that? How you stand, whether you look at your watch, whether you, you know, have your arms folded, whether you're open or whether you're closed, whether you look at them or whether you're looking away, whether you interrupt someone, whether you're listening to respond or listening to understand. That right there is one of the most critical pieces. And we're going to talk about listening a lot right now. If you want to lead yourself, you have to be able to have dialogue with the different voices inside of you. There's always jokes about devil on one shoulder and an angel on another, or some people call it your inner critic. Someone saying, oh, you can't do that. Negative voices. Oh, you'll never do that. You'll fail. People will laugh. I want you to think about the number of voices in your own head. I had a client once that used to talk to me about the committee in my head said, and, you know, we spent some time on different sessions going through who was on the committee. And it always comes from past experience, you know, experiences we had in the past. Who's on the committee? What is their objective? If you, okay, that person's on the committee, and that comes from some past experience, what would be the objective? Why is that person even here having a voice, causing you to think, or, you know, with this encouragement in one direction or another? And your ability to hear, understand, and you don't have to agree, but to understand the different impulses that you have. And I'm going to call them voices in your head. No, I'm not talking about being schizophrenic. I'm talking about all of us have a committee in our head. Maybe it's a committee of two, and maybe it's a committee of 22. Your life experience is what dictates that. Maybe you had really strong parents. Maybe you had a certain cultural upbringing that shouts at you all the time. Maybe you had a certain religious upbringing that's very prominent and overbearing. And so you want to do a certain thing, and you have this voice shouting at you, no, you shouldn't do that. And you just know that there's a conflict, and you don't sit down and say, okay, what are the voices, and who are they? What are their goals, and what are they saying? And are they really working in my best interest? Now, it's easy to illustrate this with a corporate example. So maybe you've all worked in situations where you had a department, maybe a small one of 6 to 10 people. So you have a department of 6 to 10 people, and there's some really strong opinions, and they're not, you know, they're not aligned with each other. This person thinks you should do a thing this way, and this person thinks it should be different, and it devolves into, you know, friction, and maybe there's some negative emotion, and maybe it even gets heated, you know, language and argh, and people go behind their backs. And as the manager, leader, executive, I used to have people come to me and complain about other people. And when you have that kind of communication breakdown, it's really hard until you solve it to get clarity and move forward. This is the same with you. You're trying to create your ultimate life and you have competing objectives. So a real example is you tell yourself, I need to get in better shape. I don't like the fact that I'm not in good shape. I get tired easily. You know, my doctor's been telling me to, you know, exercise or lose weight or whatever. And then there's a conflict that says, I don't want to go through self-deprivation, depriving myself of food I like. I don't want to have to exercise. And there's these conflicting voices. As long as that's going on, the default is always do nothing. In a company, it's the same thing. You've got friction. And the default is it delays projects. It delays progress. If you as the leader and in your own self, if you as the supervising voice says, we're going to do this, often the other voices undermine you. And you may have seen that in the office. You're trying to move something forward and somebody else is finding fault, creating problems, maybe intentionally doing stuff late, pointing out problems on other people's work, you know, doing everything to sabotage, slow down, or undermine your progress. That can happen in your own life. That has to be cleaned up if you're going to have peace in your heart, if you're going to get to whatever you set your goals are, more money, more health, or, you know, movement in your progress and project work. So learning to listen and listen not just to answer and argue, but really to understand what someone really thinks, or in your case, individually, what is the voice that says, I don't want to exercise. I don't want to be, you know, have to not eat certain foods. I don't want to do that. What is that voice? Is it a voice saying, I want you to die young? I want you to be unhealthy, get diabetes, and die young. No, probably not. Maybe it's a voice of earlier in your life, you know, being deprived of things. Or maybe the exercise thing, it's fear of failure. I'll go to the gym and look stupid. But understanding those voices is the key. It's not just nice. It is the key to creating a way forward. So, for example, if the fear is failure, then don't go to the gym. Create an exercise a ritual at home. Get an exercise buddy. Go take walks. Do something that lowers the pressure so you can take steps forward, because success begat success. I've created exactly that kind of thing moving forward in a corporate environment where there were conflicting opinions. Let's understand all the conflicting opinions. What if we try this? What if we try this as just an experiment? And you get something where you can make some progress, and then people see, you know what, there actually is a way forward. So communication is absolutely critical. And the key to communication is good listening, not listening to argue, not listening to respond, but listening to truly and deeply understand. And the goal of that understanding is to craft a way forward. Now, when you're arguing with yourself, this can be tricky, but it's also fun. It's also really fun. I know that because at one point in my personal development journey after 2007, when I began this, after years of addiction and other struggles, I had a long multi-hour talk with the different argument people in my head. And I absolutely had to craft a compromise and a way forward. And it was so serious for me that I actually wrote out the agreement and I signed it as the different people. And you might think I'm nuts and schizophrenic, but it worked. The fourth C is commitment. Commitment. Okay. Now we have a problem in our world that creates a lack of unity, a lack of progress. And that is, we don't know what the words of commitment really are anymore. I'll tell you a funny story. You all know someone that if you ask them to do something, hey, will you come to my party? Or will you come help me with this? And they say to you, yeah, sure. Some people, if they say that, you can depend on them. Many people, if they say that, you actually don't know. And here is the unspoken subtext. Yeah, I'll come if I remember, if I still feel like it, if I don't get a better offer, and if you don't piss me off between now and then. And if one of those four things happens, automatically they get a pass. They don't tell you, they just don't show. And if you ask later, oh, well, I got an offer to go to this concert, or my this broke, and we're just supposed to understand. If, on the other hand, someone really wants to emphasize their commitment, then they add a lot of extra words. No, I swear, I promise. No, really, I mean it. On my, you know, in the Bible, on my mother's grave, and they add a lot of crap because the words of yes, I will don't mean anything. So when you're communicating with a team as a leader, you define what a commitment is. And when you create a situation where when you say something, it's absolutely true, people trust you, they begin to trust you, and as that goes on, they trust you, period. You said so. Oh, it's going to happen. Because that's what you always do. Another way to create that consistency, not consistency, but create that commitment between the team members and yourself is there's the old phrase that says crap runs downhill. So somebody gets in trouble and then you get yelled at as a leader and then, you know, you yell at somebody else. Crap runs downhill. No, if you want to create commitment, the answer is crap stops. And it stops with you as the leader. You just take that. And then you go and figure out what needs to change. But the way that it happens isn't crap runs downhill. That sort of thing. That's the antithesis of leadership and commitment. It just creates resentment and negativity. So if you, in a team at work, it's easy to understand that. Boss yells at you because something didn't go right, and you don't immediately go call a bunch of people in your office and yell at them. You think about it. You absorb the energy of the criticism, the energy of the negativity, and you don't communicate that. Now, you do have to fix problem. I'm not pretending that away, but when you gather your team or the affected members, the energy with which the communication made is made is no longer negative. It isn't you effed up, idiot. How come you? None of that. And here's why. Remember we talked about communication last C. When people feel attacked or belittled or criticized, they quit listening. Look at yourself. When someone comes and blasts you, the only thing we're doing is trying to defend ourselves or get back at them. When people feel attacked, criticized, they quit listening. Communication stops and productivity goes to hell. So if you absorb the negative energy and then you create a constructive environment to fix the problem, I'm not pretending you don't address it and fix it. And if it's urgent, you fix it urgently. But you just lay it out. This happened. That was not our desired result. What are we going to do with this? And we need to have it fixed by, 15 minutes, an hour, tomorrow, next week, whatever it is. But the absorption of the negative energy stops with you. That creates commitment among the team members that you lead faster than almost anything else. Telling the truth and stopping the negative energy are two of the most powerful things. Now, let's apply that to your own self. If you're a leader of yourself, here's how that exact principle applies there. When you do something and it fails, you try something and it doesn't work, maybe you get embarrassed, maybe someone ridicules you, maybe you fall on your face. Whatever happened, happened. The energy with which you talk about it to yourself is the same thing. So if you go on a rampage and yell at yourself for being a failure, stupid, can't do this, I knew it was wrong, it would never work. If that's the kind of language you use, you're going to find yourself fearful to try again. It's actually no different than talking to another person. If you yell at yourself and you're negative all the time, you, I knew you couldn't, you never, you shouldn't have tried. If that sort of communication is how you talk to yourself, you're destroying your commitment. You're destroying your commitment to the goal, and you're destroying your commitment to making commitments and making progress. So that is absolutely one of the biggest stumbling blocks for self-leadership. It is, how do you talk to yourself? Because nobody ever accomplishes their goals on the first time. Nobody ever goes straight up the mountain. There's always setbacks and struggles and problems and ups and downs. How you handle those, especially when you're talking to yourself about yourself, is perhaps the largest determinant of your ability to be committed, keep going, try again, get up, dust off, and move forward. The last C is consistency. Consistency. Now, let's do the corporate thing first. When you're a leader, your life outside happens. Maybe your spouse yelled at you. Maybe one of your kids did something weird. Maybe your car got stolen or broke down on the way to work. If you bring that negativity into work, into running your team, then you are not consistent. You show up angry and frustrated, and until and unless the people who work for you don't understand that it has nothing to do with them, and they believe that, there's fear. There's, you know, negative production. So you need to either not be concerned and know you'll handle it later. And I'm not pretending it isn't a struggle, whatever it was, but don't, you know, don't put it through onto them, even energetically. Or the other way, which is one I really loved, is just to share, my car was stolen, so grumpy day for me, and then move on so that it is completely clear what's going on and it is immediately obvious that everything has nothing to do with them, and then act like it. The highest compliment, I don't know the highest, something that someone said to me that I took as a real compliment. I was speaking at an event and I got off stage and it was in between. And I put a lot of stuff on social media, a lot of Facebook posts. And someone came up to me in the break and I didn't know this person, but they stuck their hand in front of their face and they went, same dude. And what they were communicating is, me at the event and in person was exactly the same person that they had seen in other venues on social and in other videos. To me, that was the consistency. And I felt really good about that because that meant the impression that I gave about who I was authentic. So consistency in your values, in your standards, in what you demand of yourself, and how you treat others, that needs to be consistent. Those are the five principles of self-leadership and team leadership with the right adaptations: clarity, connection, communication, commitment, and consistency. Now, what does that have to do with creating your ultimate life? Well, I hope that for the most part, that's really obvious. If any or all of those feel difficult for you, that's not weird. They are difficult until we learn to do them, until we learn to make them part of our lives. We are conditioned to be defensive. We live in a society where criticism and negativity is the norm. People in this society right now get off on canceling people and bashing and all that sort of thing. So it can be difficult. And it will control you and me until and unless we realize we are sovereign, and when I do this, I mean I have the controls. I'm flying my own plane. You can yell at me from the passenger seat all you want, but I control my own plane, my elevation, my pitch, how I'm flying, how I land, how I take off, right? And I urge you, and I invite you, and I lovingly plead with you, don't give up control of your plane, your life, your attitude, your pursuit of goals, your authentic and real self and soul. Don't hand that over to someone else. Get completely clear on what you want. Create a connection with whoever's appropriate, but with yourself, your authentic self, your divine inner, that. Who are you and what do you stand for? Be clear in your communication so that there's no question who you are, what you stand for. decide what it is you're committed to, and then make that commitment bulletproof, and then do all you can to remain consistent. Now, we all fall. We all fail. So this is not a pretending that that doesn't happen. But when we do, don't hide it. Don't pretend it away. Here's my words for me. Whenever I fall or fail in any of my declarations, I get up, fess up, clean it up, and recommit. That returns me to the pilot seat. It liberates me from fear of judgment and mistakes, and whatever the cleanup is, it is. And I promise, because this is what I experience and what I help people do, it will help you create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.